I entitled this A Brief History of the Church of God from 1934 to 2015. So you may think, we're going to be here a long time. That's 2,000 years. But it's not 2,000 years. If you want to go back to 31 A.D., we're going to look at primarily the years from 1934 to 2015. As you know, we are a part of the organization, the United Church of God, and we are in our 21st year. We began in 1995, so last year in 2014 would have been our 20th year. That we're in our 20th year, and it is important, I think, that we think about where did we come from, and also ask where are we going. Some say that history is written so that the next generation can learn and avoid the pitfalls experienced by those who went before. I heard that definition before I ever came into the church. I think Thucydides said something to that effect. But however, as you look at history and people reading history, the learning from history is not all that common. A philosopher by the name of Aldous Huxley said that men do not learn very much from the lessons of history is the most important of all lessons of history. They don't learn much from history. Anonymous said, history repeats itself because no one was listening the first time. And George Santayana said, those who cannot learn from history are doomed to repeat it. And that's very true. We keep repeating the same mistakes. That's one of the things that got my attention before I came in the church. That seemed to ring a bell with me, that we were continuing to repeat the mistakes of history over and over and over again. And the question was, why? Why would that be the case? And coming into the church helped to answer that for me. As you begin, you go back to a study of the New Testament, the Gospels and the Epistles. They all give us instruction regarding the church. They tell us what went on. They tell us how the church handled things, how things developed in the early church, and we can learn certain things from them. And we'll be doing more of that. This is just the beginning of looking at this subject in a broader scope. But you go back to the time of the apostles, the apostolic era. The church was founded in 31 A.D. And the church began to grow by leaps and bounds as the apostles went out to spread the gospel of the kingdom of heaven. The church began to grow to a great extent in Jerusalem itself. Thousands were baptized after Peter's first sermon. The 12 went out and were joined later by Paul and Barnabas. And eventually other men, such as Titus and Timothy, began to serve in the church and to help to spread the gospel. Christianity spread to all points of the compass, and churches were established throughout the known world. In the apostolic era, the church blossomed. However, by the time of the last apostle, the bloom had gone off the rose. And we'll look at that as we conclude today. So we can find some evidence of the true church over the 2,000 years of the history of the church. We can find some evidence of the church from time to time, but usually the evidence we find was given to us by the church's detractors, those who were opposed to the church. And their comments sometimes are accurate, many times they're not. So we can find some evidence of the true church. And we can note that the church always existed during the 2,000 years, but we just catch glimpses of God's people during those 2,000 years. And the church blossomed during the apostolic era, but as you go back in the history of the church, you don't find it blossoming like in the apostolic era. It didn't happen. The church was small. The church much of the time was in hiding. But one blossoming of the church began about 90 years ago. And it began with this particular individual, Mr. Herbert Armstrong. And Mr. Herbert Armstrong was a man. He was a man who was called by God. And he was a man used by God to bring some order out of the chaos that reigned in the Church of God in the 1920s. The Church of God had surged with the Church of God Seventh Day and had been growing and was vibrant. By the 1920s, that church had declined. That church still exists, but it has declined from what it once was. So Mr. Armstrong came into a period of time when the church was somewhat chaotic, and he sought not to bring order to the chaos, but to pursue the truth. And as you begin to pursue the truth and as you pursue it diligently and teach the truth, it can bring order out of chaos. Mr. Armstrong's calling began with a challenge from his wife, Loma. She challenged him concerning the Sabbath. She had talked to a neighbor, and as a result of talking to her neighbor and looking at things, she challenged her husband. Her husband basically told her she was out of it and decided he was going to prove her wrong, and in fact ended up proving her right. And once he had proven this topic, he moved to other topics, such as evolution versus creation. And his studies of the Bible led him to see that what most of Christianity believed was, in fact, not in harmony with the Bible. There was a variance there that he had never recognized before. He had never looked at the subject. And many of us were in the same boat. We had not looked at the subject either. We just went along and we did whatever everybody else in the Christian community did. Eventually, Mr. Armstrong felt that it was important to begin to share the truths that he was learning concerning the Bible. So in October 1933, he went on a small 100-watt radio station in Eugene, Oregon. The station was KORE. He was offered free time along with other ministers in that area, and he began to having a 15-minute slot. And as he would speak and he would expound on the Bible, people began to take notice and people began to contact the station. So the station owner asked Mr. Armstrong to begin having a regular program of his own. So on the first Sunday in 1934, the Radio Church of God first aired. And in our time, you know, as we look at our time, we've been on most recently on Ion Television. And, you know, we were on Sunday, which ended a pretty good time. However, the responses were good. Ion noticed people were tuning in at that time, so they said, you know what? We're not making that much money off these people, so let's move them to Friday at 8:30 in the morning, and we'll give this Sunday slot to somebody else because we can sell more ads and make more money. So there we are, moved to Friday. And, you know, I would say that if we get a lot of response on Friday at 8:30, that is due purely to the power of God. So God can do anything. And what goes on in the church, it always has been the case that it's not us doing it or our money or our numbers. It's a matter of God doing it. So Mr. Armstrong started broadcasting, and then the next thing that he undertook was to begin to publish a magazine called The Plain Truth. And it started out as a church bulletin and eventually went into a magazine. In time, the magazine began to go out to 8 million readers worldwide. 8 million readers. It went out far, it went out wide, and lots of people came into contact with the Plain Truth magazine. And Mr. Armstrong's goal in sharing the gospel was to make the truth plain. And that's what we, you know, basically his premise was, keep it simple, stupid. And it's still the important principle to keep it down to a level people can understand. Share the truth with them and keep it simple. Our challenge today is we are publishing, at this point, the Good News magazine, soon to be the Beyond Today magazine. And the circulation is very small. A few years ago, because of finances, we had to cut back on the number of magazines published. So the goal is to try to add to the number of people that are subscribing to the Good News magazine. And we hope that by sending about 10 million direct mail advertising bits of information, that we will add about 53,000 people to the Good News subscriber list. But it's, when you think about 8 million, 53,000 isn't very many. But it is where we are at today. And what we're having to figure out at this time, most people don't read magazines anymore. I like magazines. I like something that I can put in my hand and hold as far as a book or a magazine. But a lot of people don't do that anymore. That's the older generation that likes a magazine, and the younger generation is more internet-based. And so if they're looking at a magazine, they're looking at it online. For instance, I don't subscribe to a newspaper. I look at the news online. and I get all the news I need and read all kinds of articles, and I don't have to pay for it. That's the main reason. But I also enjoy holding it in my hands and looking at it. But we're trying to find the best way that we can, and we may have to adjust the model that we're involved in. But you can see that as the church began, it began to grow, and there were many subscribers, 8 million at one time. So this verse was essential to what Mr. Armstrong was doing. This gospel of the kingdom will be preached in all the world as a witness to all nations. Not only a witness, but we also said it was a warning to all nations. And then the end will come. Mr. Armstrong felt that it was imperative that he preach the gospel to the world. Hence, he began pursuing radio and publishing, and his background was lent itself to his being very good at that. The broadcast spread from Oregon to other parts of the country, including the 50,000-watt stations in various parts of the country, WHO in Des Moines, WLS in Chicago, WLW in Cincinnati. And I know that I was driving across I think it's KOA that's in Denver. I was driving across the United States after I got somewhere between 1969 and 1971, and I was driving across on Interstate 40 headed toward North Carolina, and it's dark, and I'm driving along, and all of a sudden I am dialing the radio because, you know, you drive out of an area where you can hear a radio station, but you could get stations from a long way away. So I was on Interstate 40, but from up in Denver, I could pick up the broadcast, the World Tomorrow broadcast. Garner Ted Armstrong was speaking, and I just caught the end of it. And then he's talking about some booklet that you could get for free. Just call this number or write this. And I'm trying to scramble around and find something to write with in the dark and imperiling life and limb and trying to do that. But I heard it once. I never heard it again. I drove on to North Carolina and went on with my business. But I eventually came into contact with the church later on. But Mr. Armstrong's voice could be heard far and wide as a result of purchasing time. And the church began to grow. It began to grow, and people began to write in to P.O. Box 111 in Pasadena, California, and request literature. And as they received the literature, they began to respond. And congregations began to be established. And as a result of congregations being established, you could establish a congregation, but what they found was if they had nobody that they could have there to lead the congregation and faithfully care for those people, that they all drifted away. Very few of them stayed. And so what they did is they established Ambassador College in 1947 in order to prepare and train men and women to serve the congregations. And eventually you had three colleges, one in Pasadena, one in Big Sandy, and one in Brickettwood, England. And you trained individuals who could serve in the church. And the thing is, as you had the training take place, the fact that the church has continued on has a great deal to do with it. You had trained personnel who could take on the responsibility of overseeing the churches. And you're coming to the end of that crop that was sown and bore fruit until the end of Ambassador College. You don't have a lot of those people left. And that's an issue that we're trying to address and resolve. So how many of you, as you think about this, how many of you sitting here today came into the church via the preaching of Herbert Armstrong, Garner Ted Armstrong, The Plain Truth, or contact with members of the church? You know, if you did, raise your hands. So many of us came in as a result of those things. And whether we want to acknowledge it or not, most of us sitting here came into the church as a result of the work of Herbert Armstrong. And those of you who are younger are here because of the work of Herbert Armstrong. Most of it can be related back to him and the work that he did. In fact, if you look at all of those Church of God organizations, almost all of them trace their origin back to the Worldwide Church of God and Herbert Armstrong. So those are just the realities of where we're at. So as a result of Herbert Armstrong, we came into contact with booklets, Does God Exist?, Pagan Holidays, or God's Holy Days Which? The Ten Commandments, is all animal flesh good for food? All about water baptism. What is the true gospel? Most of you have that came in during Mr. Armstrong's era, you at least cracked these books at least once. All right? So we came into contact with the church. We received this literature. We went through the literature, and that literature helped us to come to understand the various topics that are pertinent to us as Christians. And this is just a few of the booklets we have. Many people came into the church because they read a particular booklet, 1975 in Prophecy. So they read that booklet and they were all terrified because the world was coming. We were going to go to a place of safety. And in 1975, Christ was going to come back. So a lot of people were motivated that way. And as you look, if you ever get a copy of that, look through it and all the grisly pictures, you know, people, all these dead bodies and these big bulldozers bulldozing the bodies out of the way and all the warts and things on people. My wife never liked those pictures. So she was not a Basil Wolverton fan. But they were effective. And but the fact, you know, I came into the church in 1972. And this was on people's minds at the time. But I came in 72. I wasn't all worked up about it. I didn't know about a place of safety. I didn't know the world was to end in 1975. Didn't know any of that. But a lot of people that had been in the church, they were motivated by that and they were looking forward to that happening, but it didn't happen. Some other things that we came into contact with many of them, you know, I've been in many, many different households where they had gone through the 58 lesson correspondence course. And they had big binders with all of the lessons and all of the notes that they had made as they had gone through the lessons. And I did parts of the 58 lesson course. Those who are old timers will remember that. I did the 32 lesson course. I think when I first came in the church, they had a 12 lesson course. Then they did a updated version of the 58 lesson course, and the 32 lesson course was done. And the 32 lesson course is, to me, was the best product we ever made because it didn't have all the big type. Didn't tell us that Hitler was alive and going to, you know, do this or that, you know, and all of that. We didn't have so much of that hyperbole. It was more straightforward and just looking at the scriptures, which I thought was most helpful. Well, I learned a lot through going through that, and you can still access these the booklets and all of these things online if you search them out. So the 1960s and 70s for the Worldwide Church of God were a time of unparalleled growth. And as I said, congregations were being established. And as you looked at the people of that time, it is amazing to look at at the motivation these people had. They came, they found the truth, and there was a certain zeal that these people had. And you could feel the zeal in the church at that particular time. And these people were hungry for the truth. They wanted to learn. They didn't come to the church with the truth. They came to the church realizing they didn't know the truth. And they wanted to learn more about the truth and learn about God's way of life. And they were hungry and they were thirsty for the truth. And as a result of this, you didn't have people missing church much. They sought to be there every week. And people drove long distances in order to be at church. And they were there, and they were a very dedicated group of people. And they drove some really bad cars those long distances. They weren't well-to-do, but they did what they had to do. When you had socials, you had clubs, you had Bible studies, they were well-attended. People stayed after church, and they attended and participated in those things that the church was putting on in order to build a community. In order to build the church and to draw together as a unified whole. Things are very different today. People don't stay for socials. We do have a pretty good attendance at club, but Bible study, lots of people just hit the road, they eat, and then they hit the road for whatever reason. But they were well attended then because people wanted to learn the truth. As you looked at the church at that time, amazingly, they had two services. For many years, they had two services because people were hungry for the truth. And there was no question. You know, when my wife and I first started attending, there were two services on some occasions. And you know what? They scheduled it, and we came. It's kind of like the movie there about the baseball field. If you build the baseball field, they will come. And they scheduled it, and we came. Nobody questioned it. And we were hungry for the truth. Yes, it was sometimes hard to go through two services, but we did what we thought was the best thing. And you know, the people at that time were very desirous of spreading the gospel. Their hearts were in the work. They were willing to contribute. They were willing to sacrifice. And that we still see that in the church today. But they wanted to spread the gospel to the world. And as you look at the world today, the world, does it need it less today than back in the 1960s and 70s? Absolutely not. The world's a worse place. And it's desperately in need of the truth to be spread as a witness and a warning. Now, the reality is this, some realities. Not everyone who came into the church was perfect. I know that's a shocker, but they were not perfect. They didn't treat each other properly all the time. They didn't set good examples. They did things they shouldn't be doing. They sinned. They weren't perfect. And we're still not. That's not changed. And there were those, there were those who came in for the wrong reason. You know, they were going to escape the wrath to come. But when they found out the wrath to come was a long way off, a lot of people said, I'm not sure there's a wrath to come at all. And eventually, many people who came into the church and were a part of the church and we thought were a part of the church, they came to resent the truth. They came to resent it because it restricted their lives and what they wanted to do. And so when somebody said, you know, you don't really have to do that anymore, these people latched right on to that and marched right on out of the church. Another reality is this. The ministry did not always serve their congregations well. They didn't. Not everybody that was designated as a minister was a pastor. They did not love their flocks. And in fact, they sometimes mistreated their flocks. Did some pretty nasty things to them. And they never should have been ministers in the first place. But that's not everybody. And we probably all have our Worldwide Church of God horror story of difficulties that we had in the church. But all of that does not change the reality that God is the God of all creation, and Jesus Christ is the head of the church, and the Bible is His Word, and He instructs us how to live and how to deal with these things. And we have to deal with them in a way that is Christian. And sometimes it's very challenging. It's very challenging. You know, I have my one little horror story, which was minor. I know one guy, he was traveling around and with the minister, and the minister would never stop to eat. And he's starving. He's starving. So what he would do is he would buy a packet of M&Ms. And he'd have them in the pocket of his jacket. And as they're driving along, he'd slip his hand into his pocket and palm one of those M&Ms and pop it into his mouth when the other guy wasn't noticing. And he went through, and the person would torture him by turning the heat up and different things like that. And, that's not right. That's not right. There are enough trials in life that we don't need to set trials up for people. But those are the challenges we face. And unfortunately, people allow these things to overwhelm them. And yes, they are discouraging, but you can't let those things get the better of you. And hopefully we don't have those things so prevalent as they once were. But, let's stop at 1986. By 1986, the year of Mr. Armstrong's death, the church had grown large, and you had better than 100,000 people attending the Feast of Tabernacles. But with Mr. Armstrong's death, a new leader, Mr. Joseph Tkach, was chosen. And sadly, the new leadership was not inclined to keep the faith once delivered to the saints. And over time, it became clear that the new leadership of the Worldwide Church of God was on a different path, a path that led away from the basic truths of the Bible that had been established over time. Did we have perfect understanding at that time? We did not, but we understand many basic things, and we're still learning. But the basics of the church were right at that time. We have things we need to better understand, but we still have the basics ready, and it's a matter of the main problem is, will we apply the basics? Will we live by them? That's the most fundamental thing. So as a result of them deciding that they're going to go and move away from the faith once delivered, then we had a doctrinal crisis developed. The crisis began to unfold as the leaders of the organization began to move the organization to a Trinitarian point of view. And probably many of you remember that when you began to move toward the Trinity. And thankfully, we had leaders of the church who saw through that. In fact, as they prepared tapes that they were going to send out to the ministers to lay all of this out for them. And so they said, what we'll do is we'll present this material to the regional pastors. So they began presenting this to the regional pastors, and the regional pastors tore it apart. And so they're asking questions, and, you know, if you're saying this, then that means this, and questioning what was going on there. So they eventually said, this isn't working. So then they just had all the people that agreed with what they were doing sit there and listen, and got rid of the, you know, had the regional pastors not be a part of all that. And thankfully, they did stand up for the truth and did resist the nature of God. The crisis reached a boiling point when we were told that we did not have to keep the Sabbath. You can do anything you want on the Sabbath. We did not have to keep the holy days. We did not have to. We could eat anything that we wanted, that which was unclean. The law was done away with. We did not have to tithe. So what was the result of teaching those things? Well, it's called the inevitable outcome was division. The inevitable outcome was division. And it was introduced into this heresy was introduced into the church, and it brought about this division. You had those people who said, this is not right. We are going to hold fast to the truth once delivered, to those the faith once delivered, and the portion which rejected those teachings and accepted the new way wholeheartedly. And it made church a difficult place to go. For those of you who were there at that time, you realized that going to church was a painful experience. It was no fun. And the church was divided. And the leadership of the, but you had a division. And the leadership of the church began to say, look, you're either going to buy into what we're teaching or get out. And that became their approach. And they tried to convince certain ministers, they tried to convince them to go along with it. And basically, if you didn't go along, they fired you. And I remember the day when, and as all of this is unfolding, I remember, talking to my regional pastor. My regional pastor was very helpful and encouraging and made suggestions that were helpful. But then, on one day, there were about 30 men fired all at once. Now, I didn't know every one of these guys personally, but I knew that they stood for the truth. And for all of those people to be fired was disconcerting. I thought, something is seriously wrong here when you're firing these guys. So they fired them, and those ministers who would not compromise were forced to resign. And as things were, you know, as things are breaking down here and it's kind of falling apart, I remember calling my regional pastor and saying, well, what's the plan? I thought, well, you know, he's always been encouraging and helpful before. So I called him and he said, there is no plan. We've got nothing. I said, are you kidding me? He said, I'm not kidding you. We don't have a plan. Where do we go from here? And as I hung up the phone, I thought, oh, man, what are we going to do? And it was a rather dark day for me. But out of the chaos came the United Church of God. The United Church of God began in 1995 with those who remained faithful to the truths of the Bible. And as you look at the number of people that became, and other organizations had started before this. Other organizations had started before this, most of them for the same reason, because they became aware of the heretical things that were going on, and they said, it's time for us to separate. There's a whole story to why United formed as opposed to joining one of the other groups. But sadly, only about 10 to 15% survived the apostasy. It wasn't a very large number of people. But the church continued on after the upheaval. And sadly, that split in 1995, which had legitimate support for it since it had to do with doctrine, there have been splits since. And there's no real good biblical reason for those splits. They've been primarily as a result of power struggles. And you know, that's the challenge for all of us as we have things aren't going the way we want, you know, to wait for God, wait for Jesus Christ, the head of the church, and the one who leads us through his Spirit to work it out. And you know what? He will. But you got to give him time sometime. And I can tell you that if you wait, there are times when waiting is grueling. It is not pleasant. And things may not go our way, but it is the best way to go because it eliminates separating the flock for no good purpose. And so, you know, as we go forward, the United has been around about 20 years. We're in our 21st year, and we are a much diminished group than when we started out. So the question is, why have we survived to 2015? And I think first and foremost, it's God's grace and mercy and power. It's not because of our greatness or our numbers or our money or any of those kinds of things. It's by the grace of God, really, that we have survived. Let's look at Luke chapter 12, verse 32. Luke chapter 12, verse 32. And this is encouraging to us, and it's something that is going to be true to the very end of the age. Luke chapter 12, verse 32. Here Christ is speaking to his disciples, telling them not to worry. And he says, "Do not fear, little flock, for it is your Father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom." That is the Father's desire, to give you the kingdom. Don't fear. And he addresses them as a little flock. And that's what we are. We're not a gigantic organization, and we never will be. You know, we're not going to have 1.5 billion adherents. We're not going to have a couple of billion adherents. It's not going to happen in this age. It will in the future, but not this side of the coming of Christ. So he's, don't fear, little flock, for it is your Father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom. And the gates of hell are not going to prevail against the church. The gates of hell are not going to prevail against the church. The church is going to continue on. It may be small, but it will always exist. And the church is made up of those in whom God's Spirit dwells. Let's go to Zechariah chapter 4. Zechariah chapter 4, I think this is an essential verse for us to always keep in mind, especially as we look at the way things are now. It says here, there are questions that are being asked, And there are challenges that God's people are facing at this particular time. There are great powers that are arrayed against God's people. And those people had no power to take on the kings and the potentates of that time. But what does God say? He says here, "This is the word of the Lord to Zerubbabel. Not by my might nor by power, but my spirit, says the Lord of hosts." And then he asked a most important question. "Who are you, O great mountain?" And that great mountain is symbolic of what was against God's people at that time. And it says, "Before Zerubbabel, you shall become a plain, and he shall bring forth the capstone with shouts of grace, grace to it." Nothing can stand against God. Nothing. And it's not by our greatness or our might or our power. It is going to be through God's Spirit. So it is a walk of faith that we are involved in to the very end of the race. And God, thankfully, has blessed us with enough faithful men and women to continue where we are today, to continue to this point where we are today. And they've been faithful, and they've been true, and you know, they realize no organization is perfect. United isn't. But it's a place where, you know, the organization avails us with the opportunity to be organized, to have some sort of structure, and to be able to meet together to focus upon the truths of God, and to be spiritually fed, and to fellowship with people of like mind. And we have to consider some realities in our organization, in our local congregation. There are some realities, that some mountains that we have to look at here. UCG 2015, organizationally, we have a core of leaders and members who desire to hold fast to the truth revealed by Mr. Armstrong, in Mr. Armstrong's time. and beyond. And I think that we've come to understand certain things a little more clearly, and that is a blessing. We're still learning, not necessarily new truth, but we are learning how to apply the truths that we have learned. As Dr. Ward always said, we're still trying to close the gap between what we know and what we do. That's probably the one statement that Dr. Ward made that I will always remember, because it is so pertinent and is what hopefully we're all striving for. But the core of longtime faithful ministers and members is dying out, whether you realize that or not. There are a few members coming along, but we are at this time losing members to the grave as fast as new members begin to attend. We're not growing very much, if at all. Consider this. Consider the ministry. These on the left-hand side of your screen, those are ministers who have some very serious health problems. Noel Horner, he's had some very serious health problems. I believe he's in a rehab facility now. Malcolm Murray had a heart attack in the hospital, and I think he is up and running again. But, he came within a hair's breadth of ending his life before the feast last year. Chuck Zimmerman, he is still sick. He cannot take on his responsibilities. He almost died and went through some very difficult challenges, and he's not able to do his job yet. Mark Mickelson, he had a heart attack up in the mountains preparing for camp. Bill Cowan had a stroke recently, and he's in rehab, and he cannot do his responsibilities. Will they be able to come back? I don't know. You also have men who are going to retire. Vernon Hargrove retired, came back when we had in 2011, and then he's retired again. And Vernon Hargrove has a lot of years on him. You know, he's been ridden hard for a long period of time, and he's been willing to do what he needs to do. Fred Kellers is in his 70s, so he's retired. Going to be replaced by Mr. Gary Petty. Steve Schaefer is older, and he's retired, and he's going to give it up this year and move back to Michigan. Dave Mills is quite old as well. They've been longtime faithful men who have stood up for the truth. Gary Antion, he's going to retire also. So you have men who've been around a long time, and they're going to be replaced by other people. Sometimes you've heard of them, sometimes not. But we're trying to find people to fill all of the spots in order to take care of the flock of God. Think about this. Where will UCG be in 10 years? Most of the current full-time pastors my age or older will be gone. And those who have stood fast during the upheavals of the last 20 years will be gone. Not just from UCG, but from most of the other organizations as well. Just think about this. Victor Kubik will not be president of United. Roy Holiday will no longer be the head of ministerial and member services. Robin Weber will probably not be the chairman of the council. Scott Ashley will most likely not edit the church's magazine. Scott Ashley started the school the year that I did, 1972. So he's been a long time faithful servant and has written many articles over the years. Dr. Ward will not be pastoring nor serving on the Council of Elders. Maybe he will be, but there comes a point where you just can't do it anymore. My generation will be passing from pastoral duties, and the question is, who will take on the leadership positions in the church? Will we have people to fill all the gaps? I think Christ's words are quite telling. And in reading, let's go to Matthew chapter 9, and in reading what's said here, to me this rings true more than ever before as you step back and you think about the reality of where we are at. Matthew chapter 9, verse 36, and this is encouraging, but I think it applies to where we're at in the church at this time. And it's in the context of Christ finding the people were weary and scattered like sheep having no shepherd. And if you don't have shepherds to take on the duties and the responsibilities to oversee the flock, they will become weary and they will become scattered. And the question is, who will fill the gap? This goes on to say, then Christ said to his disciples, the harvest truly is plentiful, but the laborers are few. I don't think there's a statement that could better apply to where we're at in time. In verse 38, therefore pray the Lord of the harvest to send out laborers into his harvest. If there's anything that we would beseech God for, is that he would send laborers into his harvest. We need them. We need them. And only the Lord of the harvest is going to supply them. Now, to drive the point home a little more clearly, let's talk about UCG Houston. The church in Houston began on Friday night, March 20th, 1956. That's a long time ago. And by 1964, the church had grown to 650 members, and in 1966, the church was divided into Houston North and Houston South. In 1969, the year that I graduated from high school, Bud Beamer was ordained a local elder. That's a long time ago. A long time ago. At Pentecost in 1990, Tom Henniger was ordained a deacon. And everyone else in our congregation who has been ordained in our current congregation was ordained since 2011. And through all the upheavals from 95 on, we also have a core of people who have remained faithful. And so we're going to take a photo tour and think about some of the people who serve in our congregation. Now, before I start, I want to have a disclaimer. If your photo is not included here, it is no judgment upon you. Okay? And if there's a bad photo, it's my fault. I'll take all credit for that. But the point is just to illustrate a point about the need for servants in the church. And as you look at the people, look at their age as we go through this. And not every servant is mentioned or there's a picture. First of all, we have the Beamers. The Beamers he was an elder in 1969. So he's been around a long time. He and his wife have been around a long time. He anoints, he speaks, and helps to serve our congregation. But Mr. Beamer is not in his 20s. Mr. Beamer is in his 70s. All right? This man and his wife, they've served the church long and hard. Mr. and Mrs. Henniger, he deposits the tithes and offerings sent locally. He helps out with speaking. They've been longtime servants, and he helps out in anointing and other duties in the church. But Mr. Henniger is 82, I believe. Is that right? I think that's right. So he's 82. The newest elder is Mr. Sappington. And he and his wife, they serve the congregation. Mr. Sappington also helps out in Mexico. And how many ministers they have in Mexico? The null set. They have zero. So the only way that you have somebody speak to the brethren in Mexico is if somebody comes in from out of the country, or they do videos, or they may do some phone hookups from time to time. But there are not a lot of ministers that are available in Mexico. None. In fact, they had a minister in Chile. He's not actually ordained, but he was serving the brethren there. But the Mexico told him, you're not a Mexican citizen. You're out of here. Interesting. You cannot stay in Mexico unless you're a citizen. Next servant is Mr. Steve Corley. Mr. Corley serves as a deacon. He gives sermonettes and split sermons. He closes the hall. And from our experience here, is a very willing servant, helps with setup and takedown, and serves week in and week out, and he's much, much appreciated. But Mr. Corley has told me that when he retires, he wants to move to Tennessee. That will be Tennessee's blessing, not ours. So, and that's wonderful that you can retire and move. If we can possibly hobble Mr. Corley, we will, but we'll see how it all works out. Mr. and Mrs. Schultz, Rich and Debbie, serve as deacon and deaconess, and they help take care of the money, the treasurer, take care of the offerings, the member list, the bulletin, and so they're helping in a number of different ways. And we have Mr. Brian Weatherby. Brian Weatherby helps to open the hall and close the hall. And because he has a truck, many people call on him to move this, that, and the other thing. And so anyway, Brian's been more than willing to help out with setup and takedown, and is great in that area of service and is much appreciated. And he's young. Okay, he's one of the young ones, all right? Now, a couple of other servants in the church, Mr. and Mrs. Pettyjohn. And, you know, even Mr. and Mrs. Pettyjohn, I hear their name from different people, not from them. But they keep track of certain people that other people don't keep track of. And, you know, they'll call me and say so-and-so is having this problem or that problem, which I appreciate. But they're old. I know that's a shock. No offense, but they're old. You know, how much longer can you give people rides? How much longer can you go out and visit? Those are wonderful services that they offer to the church, but they're old, and there's going to come a day when they can't do it. Who's going to take their spot? Who's going to take their spot? Sabbath school, we have Mrs. Radcliffe helping with Sabbath school, and Debbie Schultz helps with Sabbath school, and there are those that help them. But at least one of those people is a little bit older. And, you know, in 10 years, will we be doing it? You know, For me personally, I've been doing youth things since 1976. So we've done a lot. We've had people in our homes. We've traveled here, there, the other place. We've done all of those things. But, you know, I had all sorts of energy back then. And this is just the reality that I don't have the same energy that I once had. I try to do it, and I'm going to continue to do what I can, but there comes a point when you just don't have that oomph. We don't rebound like we once did. You have those who help out in the kitchen. You know, Anthony Lichardi and Shirley Hinn, they're not spring chickens either. No offense. And Mrs. Travis has helped out for years in the kitchen and in different ways, and Mrs. Travis is not a spring chicken. So as you look at many of the servants who've been faithful and who are here every week and do all of the things that help the church to function, they're old. The question is, who will step into their spots? Who will step into their spots? Now we have some younger people here. Mr. Arnold, who serves with our, helps us with our sound. And then he has a couple of younger helpers who are much needed. They are much needed. We need them to help out. And so they've learned to do some of the sound and some of the camera work that helps the cybercast to go out. And that is much appreciated. We have Mr. Douglas, who takes care of the... sorry about the picture. I couldn't get a different pair of eyes to go in there, so... Anyway, Mr. Douglas takes care of the reports and also taking care of the attendance. And Mrs. Travis has served in the kitchen for years, helped out with senior citizens, information table at the feast. So we have people that are song leaders. You have people that do special music. People who help out in the kitchen. People help out with being greeters. People who help with the maintenance on the building. People who take care of security. All these different things go on in the church, and for the church to function well, you need people to take on those duties. So if these people die out, who will take their spots? Who will take their spots? We have to ask ourselves, you know, how many of us, of those helping out now, will be gone in 10 years? Who will fill their spots? I don't know. I don't know. From my perspective, we're going to be woefully short of people to keep things going. And that's why it's so important that we pray the Lord of the harvest to provide workers in the field. And that's the encouraging thing. God is in charge and God knows where we're at. And God is going to make sure that the little flock always remains. The gates of hell will not prevail against it. It's also why it's imperative that we develop leadership in the church. Servant leaders. To fill the needs of the church. We need the younger to take to become the servants that will do the work to help the Houston congregation and the greater church to continue. And, you know, being a servant means sacrifice. You know, People have said they can't make it to church. They can't make it to church to fulfill a responsibility because it's too far. And yes, it may be far. But you know, if some of us can get up and make it whatever mileage it is, it's a matter of whether you want to do it and whether it's a priority. You know, all of us, if we're going to make the church function, my term is suck it up. You got to suck it up and do what you need to do. So we can stand here and whine and complain about how bad it is, and it is something that is daunting, but you know, God's going to supply those who will help. So that's where prayer comes in, and asking God to supply the helpers that we need, both here locally and in the greater church, to take care of the flock. The last thing we want is for the flock to become weary and scattered. But we need people to take on those jobs. That's why we've begun having a club here to try to build bonds between the men and give the people opportunity to serve, to help them to stimulate their growth. If I can get them to merely study their Bibles and pray more, I will have accomplished my purpose. Because that's how the church is going to grow as they grow spiritually. That's how the church has always grown and matured. So the spot we're in 2015 isn't new. It's not new. Let's go back in time to the time of the last living apostle. That apostle was John. The end of his life came somewhere in the 90 to 100 AD. John was the last of the original apostles. He had lived through some amazing times. Amazing times. Times that have never been duplicated. He lived and walked with Jesus Christ during his ministry. He heard the teachings of Jesus Christ. He heard the teachings from his mouth. He didn't pick them up from somebody else. He heard Christ say the things that he said. Look what he said. Let's go back to the book of John and look at a couple of passages. John chapter 1, verse 14. John chapter 1, verse 14. It says, "And the Word became flesh. He became flesh and dwelt among us, and we beheld His glory. The glory as of the only begotten of the Father, full of grace and truth." Yes, God became man and came to the earth, and John was privileged to be able to walk with Him and be taught with Him. Later on, at the end of the book of John, in chapter 21, let's look at verse... Chapter 21, verse 24. Chapter 21, verse 24. And John is speaking of himself. In verse 24, he says, "This is the disciple who testifies of these things and wrote these things, and we know that his testimony is true. And there are also many other things that Jesus did, which if they were written one by one, I suppose that even the world itself could not contain the books that would be written." Amen. John saw it. He felt him. He was with him. He knew what had taken place. He saw Christ die by crucifixion. He was a witness. He saw the resurrected Jesus Christ. He saw him. He saw Jesus Christ rise from the Mount of Olives in the clouds, and he clearly heard that he would return in the same way that he arose to the right hand of the Father. And from the time God's Holy Spirit was poured out on the church on Pentecost, he saw the church grow by leaps and bounds. And he saw the church, those people who were sent out by Jesus Christ, begin to impact the world in a way that the world had never known before. And as they said in the church in Thessalonica, Paul had gone there, and he had preached, and it seemed wherever Paul went, he stirred the hornet's nest, and he was arrested, or something, he was stoned, some difficulty arose. And in this particular case, they were all incensed at the Christians, and they were dragging this fellow by the name of Jason, and he was going to suffer the consequences of listening to Paul and promoting what Paul was saying. And in Acts 17, verse 6, it says, "And some brethren said to the rulers of the city, 'These who have turned the world upside down have come here too.'" The 12 men that were made up the apostles and several others who joined them turned the world upside down because they taught something that went against the world and its ways and its teachings. John lived in the heyday of the church, but in his old age, things were different. And think about those of us who came out of the worldwide Church of God. We lived in a time when the church blossomed. That time's over. That time's over. That organization is a completely different organization. Ambassador College is gone. If you can go and look at pictures where they're knocking all the buildings down. And that's the way it is. That's the way life is. And we move on. We're moving toward the kingdom of God. And let's look at some things that John said in his old age here. Let's go to 1 John chapter 2. 1 John chapter 2. You know, by the time John is writing 1st, 2nd, and 3rd John, the original apostles were all dead. Paul was dead. And John alone continued to serve Jesus Christ. And he served him till his death. And what was the condition of the church in John's time? Let's go to 1 John chapter 2, verse 18. Here John says, "Little children, it is the last hour. It is the last hour, and as you have heard that the Antichrist is coming, even now many Antichrists have come, by which we know that it is the last hour." So obviously there were Antichrists at that time, but they were not the Antichrist that will come at the end of the age. And there are Antichrists living in our age as well. And the ultimate Antichrist is to come. "They went out from us," so they had been a part of the church. They had been affiliated with it in some way. "They went out from us, but they were not of us. For if they had been of us, they would have continued with us. But they went out that they might be made manifest that none of them were of us." So they had been affiliated with the church, but they didn't stay with the church, and they went out for whatever purpose it was. And many of them became antagonists to the true church. Let's go to 2 John chapter 1. 2 John chapter 1, verse 7. 2 John chapter 1, verse 7. It says, "For many deceivers have gone out into the world who do not confess Jesus Christ as coming in the flesh." They were Gnostics. They acknowledged Christ, but they did not say he came in the flesh. He was just a phantom or something along that line. "This is a deceiver and an antichrist. Look to yourselves that we do not lose those things we worked for, but that we may receive a full reward." So he says, look to yourselves. That's what we need to do. Look to ourselves that we do not lose the things that we worked for, the things that we have been taught, the things that we have believed in and adhered to all these years. We don't want to lose those, but because we want to receive a full reward. He says in verse 9, "Whoever transgresses and does not abide in the doctrine of Christ does not have God. He who abides in the doctrine of Christ has both the Father and the Son." And he talks about, if you don't come with this doctrinal belief, then you're not Christ. And then let's look at 3 John and look at verses 9 and 10. 3 John, verses 9 and 10. "I wrote to the church, but Diotrephes, who loves to have the preeminence among them, does not receive us. Therefore, if I come, I will call to mind his deeds, which he does, prating against us with malicious words, and not content with that, he himself does not receive the brethren and forbids those who wish to, putting them out of the church." So if you look at John and what he's writing here, this was not a pleasant time in the church. It wasn't a pleasant time in the church. The church had some very serious problems. But John also commends the church, and he tells them You know, he commends them in each of his letters, when I think it's important to conclude here. He says, that which was in 1 John 1, verse 1, that which was from the beginning, which we have heard, we have seen with our eyes, which we have looked upon, and our hands have handled concerning the word of life. The life was manifested, and we have seen and bear witness and declare to you that eternal life, which was with the Father and was manifested to us, that which we have seen and heard, we declare to you, that you also may have fellowship with us. And truly our fellowship is with the Father and with His Son, Jesus Christ. And we have fellowship with Him, but we have fellowship with each other, and we can encourage each other, and we need to, in difficult times, and encourage each other on to grow and mature and become the leaders and the servants that we can be. He says in 2 John chapter in verse 1, it says, to the elect lady and her children, whom I love in the truth. And not only I, but also all those who have known the truth, because of the truth which abides in us and will be with us forever. We have the truth. We must live by the truth, apply the truth, and learn to serve the great God. So we see that John's time was a discouraging time. He had gone through the time of flowering, and we're in a similar circumstance. We've seen the church flower, but it's not doing that at this time. What does the future hold? I don't know. But we have to realize we do have the truth, and we need to hold fast to the truth. And we need to hold together as a body to help each other, to encourage each other, and serve one another. That's how we're going to get through this. God's Spirit living in us, and our closing the gap between what we know and what we do. And as we do, we'll finish well. I think the thing that was on John's mind as his life came to an end was this. Where is the promise of his coming? John wasn't a scoffer. Those are the words of the scoffers mentioned in 2 Peter. John wasn't a scoffer, but I'm sure it dawned on him. Where is the promise of your coming? And I wonder if those thoughts were in John's mind as Christ spoke to him. As Christ spoke to him and revealed to him the book of Revelation. Let's end there in Revelation 1. And I think the book of Revelation was given to John to reassure him it's all going to work out. And it shouldn't only be an encouragement to, it wasn't only an encouragement for John, but it's an encouragement for all of us. It says here in chapter 1, verse 1, the revelation of Jesus Christ, which God gave him to show his servant. So it was given by God the Father to Jesus Christ to show his servants. And we are his servants. To show his servants these things which must shortly take place. And he sent and signified it by his angel to his servant John. John wrote down these things. John, who bore witness to the word of God and to the testimony of Jesus Christ to all things that he saw. Blessed is he who reads and those who hear the words of this prophecy and keep those things which are written in it, for the time is near. The time is near. It's a lot nearer than when we started. So we need to keep the faith. We need to hang in there. We need to pray the Lord of the harvest would supply those servants that we need. And next time that I speak, we'll be focusing on the scriptures that tell us certain things about a local congregation and what we can all do to be an effective part of it. So thank you for your attention, and please have a wonderful remainder of the Sabbath and a great week ahead.